State Law on Advisor Office, Parlamentary Staff, everybody. We had agreed during the process of lawmaking, as we were receiving submissions from the stakeholders, that today the Department of Labor will be responding to the submissions that have been made by the stakeholders. We have received the response of the department yesterday afternoon, but this afternoon we'll ask then the department to take us through the responses on the submissions of the stakeholders. I'm not going to go through those as normal introduction, because we've been together throughout this process. By now we know each other. All that I'll do is to ask the department to give us a report. Over to you, Didi.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, honorable members. We thank for the opportunity to engage with you on our comments that you've received and our responses to these. But before we start with the responses, just a few general remarks that we wanted to make in respect of the submission that we received. One is that we respond to these submissions that we made in the context of our understanding of where the problem is at the current stage, with the amendments that have been made to these bills in the subsequent engagements with the National Assembly. Because our responses are based primarily on our understanding of where the bills are and the issues we are containing. Secondly, I want to put on record that we agree with the majority of the those members, those that make submissions on the capacity of the inspectors in the Department of Labor. We agree to the extent that we acknowledge the fact that we will never have enough capacity to enforce the legislation. But we are doing a number of things in order to address the capacity of our inspector to deal with the challenges that we have, both at an organizational but also at an institutional level. One, at an institutional level, we are on a continuous basis engaged with National Treasury within the fiscal space that we are, that the country is, in order to see to what extent we can extend the cohort of inspectors that we have in the Department of Labor, both in relationship to the basic conditions of employment act, but also in terms of their professional health and safety and other pieces of legislation. And at an institutional level, we are doing a number of things with the occupational, with the compensation fund, with the UIF fund, in order to secure internal funding to broaden our base for inspectors, and that has gone a long way in terms, or rather let me say that we've gone a long way in securing additional resources from both these funds in order to deal with the capacity constraints that we have. But thirdly, also that we are engaging with our inspectors at a level where we try to utilize them more effectively and more progressively in terms of how we enforce our legislation. I want to put on record that the compliance is not the Department of Labor's responsibility. Compliance is the responsibility of the employers, and our enforcement and awareness raising in relationship to that. And I think that's an important thing, a point that we have to raise. Another factor that has also been, which is not necessarily the province of the remarks and the comments that we are making on the board, lies within the capacity of the CCMA to deal with the possibility of an influx of cases that would come to the CCMA. And you will notice that again we are dealing with it in the context of engaging Treasury, but also in terms of the legislative framework that we put in place, so that we allow for the possibility for the CCMA to recoup the cost for hearing cases around the national minimum wage. So we're dealing with that in a number of ways. Chair, I thought that it is important that we make these comments so that we are aware that as we engage and continue on this on this page, that we are as we are drafting the legislation, we are dealing with the organizational challenges that it might present in going forward. We're also not dealing with the issues around political the political nature of some of these submissions that have been made. If an organization says that we oppose everything in the legislation or the proposed legislation, there's no other complaint that we can make in terms of it. If they oppose the legislation, that's their position. We can't. But we try and deal with these in the context of the submission that we receive. And the last point before I hand over to Mr. Mkalipi to deal with the context, the content detail of our submission is that we've noted that a number of the submissions that have been made are based on previous drafts of the legislation. Drafts that we have that have gone through a process in the National Assembly, and the issues that they've raised have already been addressed in subsequent drafts to the legislation. And we thought that it is important that we raise that comment, so that if we indicate in our responses that we note these, some of these have been addressed already. So Chair, without further ado, I want to give over to Mr. Mkalipi to deal with the content of these submissions. We have deliberately crafted them in such a manner that they follow the outline of the legislation. So, if, for example, in the National Minimum Wage Bill comments, let me use as an example the National Minimum Wage. We first deal with the preamble and deal with the submissions in relationship to that. We deal with the interpretation, purpose, and application thereof in the next set of comments, and we cluster the comments that we receive around these issues in that format. And I thought that in terms of the discussion, it will direct the flow of discussions more appropriately and chronologically in relation to the draft of the bill that we have. So I think, without further ado, I want to give over to Mr. Mkalipi.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Mr. Mkalipi.
Thank you, Virgil, and thank you, Honourable Members. As Virgil has indicated, the bills are, the comments are structured in terms of the legislation themselves.
Yes.
We'll start with the National Minimum Wage, and then we'll go to the BCA, and then finalize with the LRA. The first comment that we deal with is from the Free Market Foundation. They are raising a number of issues, and Honourable Members, what we've done is we try to summarize.
Just hold on. Do we have all three documents?
Yeah.
National Minimum Wage, Basic Conditions of Employment Act, and the Labor Relations Amendment. So we should, in front of us, have all three. Honorable Mako?
I only have two.
Committee Secretary, can you assist? Committee.
I have minimum wage and LRA.
You should also have a BCA. So everybody is fine.
Maybe,
can you just push this one back for what did you? Okay, thanks.
That explanation that we need to put on the member is that we've summarized the comments. The essence of the comments in the document. If honorable members want to see the whole comment, they will go to the original comment. But in the document, we put summarize what is the essence of the comment of each organization, and then respond on that essence of the comment instead of rewriting the whole document in the process. Now.
Okay.
problem solving.
Is everyone hot?
Honourable members, I was saying that then you will see that on we've got the organization that has commented under the column organization. We've got a comment that they've made as we summarize it. Remember, our summary might be different from the summary from somebody else. This is how we summarize the essence of what they are raising. And then the last column is our response to that comment. Now, I will go through what is it that they are commenting on and what's our response. And as I've said, the Free Market Foundation, the first comment they are making is they are raising the issues about high level of job security and costly consequences. Insecurity, the issues about small business and complex regulation that small businesses are affected negatively by complex regulation. The issue that the Free Market Foundation always raises that our labor market is inflexible, the flexibility of the labor law. The regulatory bias against employment of low skilled workers. They are indicating that our laws are against low skilled workers, the issue of the rule of law. And as our colleague indicated, all of these comments are ideologically based comments. It's very difficult for us, they are not talking to the content of the bill, to respond on them. And that's why we're saying all these comments are ideologically comments, they are not dealing with the substance of the amendment. They attack the whole concept of the labor market regulation, where they believe that there should be no regulation, it should be free for all, and every worker must be able to decide to work without any pay. They can work for more than 9 hours. There should be no regulation at all regulating on that. And this flies in the face of the Constitution. It flies in the face of the International Labour Organization and international experience. Therefore, we have not put any response other than putting that statement in front of members. It's for members to decide how to respond on that if our response is not good enough. The other issue that they are raising, the view that the bills are unconstitutional. We must subscribe to this. The state law advisors that we trust, they've looked at the constitutionality of the bills, and they've given a certificate indicating that the bills meet the requirement of the Constitution. There's nothing to be worried about. And on top of that, these bills were assisted by experienced lawyers who one of them sits in the International Labour Organization Committee of Standards. Hessel Chibu is one is representing the country International Labour Organization Committee of Standards. And all the ALO standards are coming through his area. And he has looked at the bill around those issues. Therefore, the constitutionality, we do not think there's an issue. The other issue that they are raising is that the preamble of the bill does not talk to unemployment. The government should concentrate on efforts discovering why 9.4 million people are unemployed and set corrective measures. The bill can't deal with that because the purpose of the bill is to introduce minimum wage. And the purpose of the bill then should talk to what the bill intends to introduce. The issue of unemployment cannot be dealt with by the minimum wage legislation. And there are many government interactive in this area that try to deal with that issue. But we are only saying that the purpose of the bill differs to those that they suggest that they need to be in because it's about minimum wage. And they talk about the issue of the most direct route to eradication of poverty and reducing inequality to remove barrier to entry to job market. This is this whole concept that there must be no regulation. Therefore, if the worker is prepared to work for no pay, that worker must be able to do it. If they are prepared to work for 1,000 rand, they must work for 1,000 rand. If they are prepared to work for 20 hours a day, they must be allowed to work for 20 hours. That's the essence of this. And our response is that the bill intended to improve wages and improve income of workers. And when you improve income of the most majority of people who are in the labor market, it's got the consequences of giving them more money to be able to spend. And that affects also jobs, that affects the economy, and they are not looking at that. That's the response that's given to the Free Market Foundation. Then, honorable members, you had an input made by the Labour Enterprise Policy Research, the professor or the doctor who commented extensively on the technical issues around the bill. And we're not going to respond on all of them at one go, but we'll respond to them as they come, and we'll refer to the response who raised it. Their first question, issue that they raised, they are saying that the issue of the definition of ordinary as hours of work narrows the operation in terms of workers. Now they say, I mean, if you read their input, is that this definition does not easily accommodate. We don't know, understand what does that mean. When you say it does not easily accommodate, it means it accommodates, but not to your satisfaction. Because as soon as you use the word easily, it means that you've of the view that it does not easily accommodate. From our side, what we're saying is that the definition is clear, is that ordinary hours of work. Whether you are a worker, whether you are an employee, if you work for 5 hours, you must be paid for 5 hours. That's what the law says. The ordinary hours of work that you have worked. If you work for 6 hours, you must be paid for 6 hours at 20 rand. We can't see the confusion in that. It's clear the ordinary hours of work are the hours that you were employed to work, or the hours that the law requires you to be paid. Remember, there's a guaranteed 4 hours for workers. Therefore, if you work for less than 4 hours, you are guaranteed 4 hours. Those are the ordinary hours of work that you have worked. We cannot understand what's the condition. And even if you look on their submission, they are not putting any proposal how it should be done. How do you deal with this easily problem that they are raising on the issue of submission? Now, the next area that they are raising is that the BCA retains Section 62A, which is not aligned to the change decision in the National Minimum Wage Bill. Now, we think that they are making a mistake on this, because if you look in the bill, the bill in this, it is clear that Section 62 aligns the definition of the BCA to that of the National Minimum. Not that the definition is incorrect, they are now consistent. This is the issue that you are raising. They are looking at a different bill. They are looking at the bill before the National Assembly. And after, if you've seen yesterday, I had a discussion with him and showed him the bill as approved by the National Assembly and the comment that they are making. And he agrees that yes, they've made a mistake. The comments that they are making are on the bill before the NA. And the issue that they are raising here has been corrected with the changes that were made in the NA. Now, the issue raised by the Institute of Economic Justice, they raise the issue that the National Minimum Wage is intended to be part of a new range of policy and should aim to reconfigure the wage structure and overcome the apartheid cheap labor policy. And it should be seen as part of a broader social, and that should be part of a broader package of measures. And they believe that we have not gone enough in dealing with the wage structure. And our view is that the wage structure, dealing with the wage structure, and this is the issue that was raised at NEDLAC when the NIL was part of the NEDLAC negotiation. And we made it clear that our aim now that we're in is to introduce the National Minimum Wage. There's a long road that as a country has got to move dealing with the wage structure, but if you try to deal with everything at the same time, you might not be succeed in all of them. And we said that what we need to concentrate on is to make sure that there's a minimum wage in the country. First, that's the first most important thing. And that minimum wage is implemented. And if then, going forward, we want to revise that and look on the issue of the wage structure, let's do that as a country. But the priority now is to make sure that the national minimum wage is in place. And we're raising in our input I mean, there are many interventions by government. The NIA is going to play a very crucial part in this area. The issues of the jobs that need are going to play a very important part in this. The issue about the value of the national minimum wage, they are raising the value. They say that the value of the national minimum wage is not protected. Therefore, they of the view that, which you agree with them, we indicated that we agree with the issue that it doesn't make sense with the national minimum wage now, that is at 20 rand, and in 20 years' time, it's eroded by inflation, and it does not mean anything at that stage. And but the issue for us is that what we need to be able to do is to ensure that the committee that deals with this issue, the commission, does this work properly. And we indicated to Labour that if you look at the work of the ECC, remember, honourable members, this is not the first time in South Africa we've got minimum wages. We've got minimum wages through sectoral designation. And the Commission on Sectoral Designation has, over time, made sure that the sectoral designation adjusted to meet the effect of inflation. And if you look at Section 77, it's clear that it says the commission, I'll read this memory, the commission in doing its job must consider the cost of living and the need to retain the value of the national minimum wage. It can't be clearer than that. And that's the first item there on Section 7. It says, if you look at Section 7, Section 7 has got two, is divided into two. The first one, it says the National Commission must promote the medium-term target referred to Section 11 as their function. It must, in reviewing the national minimum wage, it must alleviate poverty and reduce wage deprivation. Then it says, in doing these three things, in Section 7, in doing these three things, it must consider the inflation, the cost of living, and the need to retain the value of the national minimum wage. Now, if the Commission is doing its work properly and does not protect the value of the national minimum wage, remember in the Commission you have labor, you've got business, you don't have government there, and then you've got experts. Now, if labor in the Commission doesn't make sure that the Commission must do its work as the law indicates, it doesn't matter what you write in the law. But even taking that into consideration, if you read the law as it is, remember, it can't be clearer than it is. Because that's what it says. It says the commission must protect the value of the national minimum wage. Therefore, the commission, if it protects the value, cannot give, review, and increase the national minimum wage below the inflation. Because they will not be protecting the value of the national minimum wage. Now, the next issue that they are raising is that they are talking about Section 4.7. They say Section 4.7 should be amended to prescribe that sectoral determination and agreement on private contracts, which are more favorable than the minimum wage, cannot be decreased after or in anticipation of the national minimum wage. Now, if you put such a requirement, then you'll be interfering with other legislation. Remember this, members. If, let us say you've got workers who are earning 40 rand an hour in a company, above the minimum wage, and the company is in distress, then the company discusses with the union, there's a union in this company, and they discuss and say, we've got two options here. One is to retrench, or the other one is to reduce salary in order to keep jobs. They earn above the minimum wage. Now, should the law say they should not do that? To collective bargaining. And we don't believe that. We don't believe that workers who are earning above the minimum wage, if there's negotiation between the company and the union through collective bargaining, for whatever reason, and the company and they agree with the union that in order to protect jobs, some people must have a reduction. That reduction cannot be below the national minimum wage. But what they are saying here, they say that we must have a law that says under no circumstances will we allow employers, trade unions, to enter into a discussion and decide, for whatever reason, that in order to save jobs, we need to do A, B, C, D, and we don't think that's correct, because that's what is going to end up. We agree with them that you cannot by agreement, this is what the law already says, you cannot by agreement agree to go below the national minimum wage. But what happens above the national minimum wage is on the basis of negotiations between the parties, if there are unions there. If unions are weak enough to agree unfairly to reduce salary, it's not a space that government should be playing in. If unions don't do their job, then workers must vote with their feet and go to unions that will protect them. That's how democracy works. If you don't protect your members, whether you are a banking source, a bank, whether you're a company, if you don't do proper service to your clients will go somewhere else. And that's our view. And the next issue that we're raising is that the law presently says it is an unfavorable practice for an employer to reduce wages in anticipation of the minimum wage. Because we know companies will start reducing wages now before the national minimum wage in order to prepare for that. And if you look at that section that makes it an unfavorable practice, that's the only section in the law that is backdated. You don't normally backdate a law. Parliament does not, in principle, backdate a law. But this one is backdated to 1st of May 2017. It says, any time from the 1st of May 2017, if a company reduces wages of workers in anticipation of the national minimum wage, then that's an unfair labor practice. The workers can go to the CCMA and challenge that issue. Now, there's another issue that has been raised around this issue that we'll deal with it when we raise the issue of unfair labor practice itself. The issue of hourly domination, they raise the issue that minimum wage should not be by hour. It should be by month, it should be by week. What we think, honorable members, in this is that when the national minimum wage comes into operation, let us say we finish our process, they come into operation in October, the president promulgates. The president is going to promulgate that the national minimum wage is 20 rand an hour. He's going to promulgate that if you work 40 hours, this is your weekly rate for the national minimum wage. If you work, this is your monthly rate if you work 40 hours a week. If you work 45, this is your weekly rate and this is your monthly rate. Therefore, all of that will be part of what is published on what the national minimum wage is. If you look on the notice that we published for sectoral determination, that's how they look. They say your monthly, your hourly minimum is 20 rand. Your monthly, your weekly is, if you work 4 or 5 days, is this. Your monthly, if you work the whole month, is this. Therefore, all of that information is going to be part of the package that the president promulgated and put it in the public arena. And the reason it's not in the bill is precisely that, remember, the original bill has dates there. It has dates when the national minimum wage should be increased, the 1st of May, and all of those issues. We've gone past the 1st of May. Now, we did not want to put another date, then go past that date also, for whatever reason. And then it was agreed in the NA that let's take that all off and leave it to the president to promulgate the dates, all of the dates that we need to have. And the president will promulgate them when we know that we are ready. Instead of raising expectations of workers and many people in the labor market and not meet the deadline that we set. The issue that we are raising on working hours.
Where did you page that?
Three. Working hours. They are raising that it was agreed, this is the issue that is raised by everybody, that it was agreed that the national hour, the working hours must be investigated. The possibility of increasing the 4 hours to 5 or 6. Now, our view is that there is an agreement at NetLink. We agreed at NetLink that the commission must one of his functions is to make sure that we investigate what would be the cost to the economy if we guarantee 5 hours. That is the role of the commission, and it's in the network agreement. But it was agreed that you don't have to put it in the law, because you can't say in the law that it will be 5 hours tomorrow when it depends on investigation. Because it's still not investigated by the committee. If the committee comes back and say, well, we've investigated this issue, we don't think the economy will be able to take the strain of increasing to 5 hours. Therefore, we're not recommending that it increase. And you've got it in the law. What do you do? And that what we're saying is that the network agreement, the network meeting, capture the spirit, and that's what was agreed at network, that you must reflect it in the minutes and the network agreement, and that the parties must make sure that that investigation takes place. The next issue that they're raising a number of recommendations. They want payment of minimum working hours to be included, as I've indicated. They are raising the issues of deduction. They want the law to prevent deduction of medical aid and pension funds by employees. They want the annual increases to be guaranteed. They don't want the law to say that the commission will review. They want guaranteed increases. They want medium term, as they say, to be put in the form that they wanted. They want the protection and improvement of sexual reproductive conditions higher than the national minimum wage already dealt with. These are the same issues that were raised by the university in the Western Cape, yeah? And they want the protection of collective bargaining wages over the minimum wage. We'll raise this issue, the ability of collective bargaining to adjust and go forward. Now, the issue of sectoral determination, we need to be talking about this on the functions of the commission. They say that as it is, the commission cannot increase or review sectoral determination. Now, I want to read from the bill member. If you read section 11 on functions of the commission, it says clearly the commission, the function of the commission is one, to advise the minister on sectoral determination. Now, our interpretation of that word, advise the minister on sectoral determination, they can advise the minister to increase sectoral determination. They don't need the minister's approval for that advice. Obviously, the minister can reject or accept the advice, but they don't have to ask for the minister. Minister, must we advise you? The law says clearly they've got powers and function to advise the minister on sectoral determination. Therefore, they don't need permission from the minister to advise the minister. They also have got powers to advise the minister on any matter concerning basic condition of employment. Therefore, they can even go beyond the sector definition and got the power to advise the minister on any matter. That's what the bill says. Now, lastly, they've got the power to perform any function as may be required of the commission in terms of any other employment law. Now, for us, it is as wide as possible what the commission can do, and they do not need to get permission from anybody to do that. But the law doesn't say that the minister is obliged to accept the advice. An advice is an advice. Obviously, if the minister will reject the advice and the minister does not apply her mind rationally, the minister will be taken to court by not even the commission. Will be taken to court by interested parties. When the minister considers apply her mind on the advice that they've received, they've got to make sure that they apply their mind properly. Therefore, we don't see what the issue that they are raising in terms of that. Now, the next issue, again, we're coming back to the Freedom Market Foundation, still in page 3, and making the same issues about economic policy the bills do not support it. Again, we raise the same issue that these comments on the paper statement is noted with regard to the reference to creating collective bargaining. We including the national minimum wage should not be substituted for trade union activity. That's our view. The national minimum wage should not substitute trade union. Trade unions should still be able to negotiate. In fact, for us, we want trade unions that goes to workers and say, if you want to earn above the national minimum wage, join our organization. We will negotiate above, because Government has also to give them 20 rand. Any trade union that gives workers 20 rand is not worth to the trade union. It must give workers more than 20 rand because the law gives workers 20 rand. And we cannot understand the issue that they are raising. On the next page, 4, we go again to the labor enterprise policy. This is the research, the university professor, doctor. Now, the first issue, they are raising an issue, and if you look in their document, they say this is there's a problem with section 4.8 of the bill, if you look in their document. But this issue that they are raising is not 4.8, it's 4.6 in the bill. That's the first thing. We say, I mean, if you want to comment, you write in the document 4.6, you comment on that document, and when you look on the bill is not 4.8, it's 4.6. That's the first thing we say. Have you applied your mind first on your comment? And they are raising the issue of, they say, when we say it's unfair labor practice, when a company changes working conditions, we're taking away the right of unions, of workers to strike on the issue. And we say we know. Now, 70% of workers that go to the CCMA to hear their case, they are not represented by a union, nor anything. Now, those workers, those are the workers that employers are going to reduce their salary. The employers are not going to reduce salaries of members of NUMSA because they know what to expect. The LRA is there. They know what to expect. They're not going to reduce a salary of NUM. They're going to reduce salary of unorganized workers, and those unorganized workers cannot go on strike because they're not organized. And they are on their individual basis, and they represent themselves to CCMA. Now, if you say if they want to solve an issue of reduction of salary, they cannot go to CCMA and for the CCMA to arbitrate on that, then you are disadvantaged very vulnerable and poor workers. And that's the issue that we are raising. We don't see first the contradiction between the two, because trade unions can still go out on strike, but we say if it means we're disadvantaging trade unions, when we protecting 70% of the workers who are, do not belong to trade unions, we've got to make up that balance as a country. Who do what protect the most? First, we say it does not take away anything from trade unions. Secondly, we say this provision of being able to go to the CCMA and argue that this is an unfair practice, it makes very good sense for vulnerable workers. The next issue that they are raising is that Section 4.7 that they are raising, that this section will create confusion. It should be able to clear through it that Section 4 and 4A of the BCA, that deduction are permitted, which are not permitted. This issue of unfair labor practice that indicated, and if you go further than that, in the current bill, 4.7 is linked to the BCA already. This is one of those areas also that they have not looked at the current bill. Because if you look at 4.7, I'll read 4.7 for members too, so that members can be comfortable that I'm speaking the truth on this. It says, Section 32, 33, and 34 of the basic condition of employment that apply to the payment of the national minimum wage to workers. Now, this is what they are saying. They say we must link up Section 34 to the minimum wage. 34 of the BCA. Section 34 of the BCA gives with deduction. Now, they say we must link that up with this section. And if you look at Section 34.7, it's already in. It says clearly that Section 32, 33, and 34 of the Basic Condition of Employment Act apply. Now, it's another problem that they raised from their own that they did not read the correct bill. They commented on an old version of the bill, not the one that was passed. Members, I'm not going to deal with COSAT or FEDUSA and NAPTO because they agree with the bill. Therefore, I'm not going to talk their issues. And then the next one on page 5, it's labor enterprise again. They raising the issue of payment in time. They say that in the sector determination in the agriculture, you've got payment in time provision made, and they are of the view that the proposal in the law will prohibit the payment in time. But that's not the case. The law is clear that sectoral determination remains in force, and they can even be reviewed. Therefore, all of those rights that is under sectoral determination, they remain in force. They can be reviewed by the commission through an advice to the minister. And again, it's a comment that they are making that is not relevant. So the law has been changed by the popular committee and the NA that is in front of this committee now. And the next issue that they are raising Section 5.2. They say to Section 5.2 must be linked to the BCA. Now, again, is there another question where they have not read the correct bill? Because Section 5.2, this is what they are saying. They want Section 5.2 to be linked to 9A of the BCA. Now, I'll read, remember, Section 5.2. It says, subject to Section 9A of the Basic Condition of Employment Act, workers is entitled to receive, then it goes ahead. Therefore, what they are asking the members to do is already in the bill that is in front of the members, because it's in there. And as I've indicated, members, that I've raised these issues with him. Now, he was finished speaking by then, and he couldn't say to the committee, I've made up the mess up on this issue. And the next issue that they are raising is on Section 6. Their view is that they say they raise this issue of time now. They say because we don't know when in the time, there might be confusion in bargaining council. Now, the first thing that we want to say, members, it doesn't matter what time you pick up. If when the national minimum wage comes up, it's going to affect companies that have not increased their salary yet will have to increase at the time the national minimum wage comes in. Companies that have already increased their salary, but they are below the minimum wage, they have to increase to go to the national minimum wage. Doesn't matter when you introduce it. Therefore, even if you say you introduce it in January, the companies that would be increasing in February will be affected in January. The company that has increased in December will be affected if they are not at the minimum wage level. Therefore, you're not going to have a situation where you have a date that is in sync with everything. The minimum wage provision is a disruption in the labor market. That's the intention. It's intended to disrupt the wage structure and increase wages of workers. Now, you can't say when you must wait, when will the bargaining council increase their wages. When it becomes law, everybody must be within the national minimum wage. And that's why we took so long in negotiating this issue, so that everybody should be seen. That's the first issue. The second issue that we want to raise here, one the issue that we are raising is that, as I've said, that when the president promulgates, the president is going to give all the money. The president is going to say the national minimum wage comes into operation in October, and the president is going to say the minister, the commission must submit to the minister proposal to review this national minimum wage by June, maybe 2019. Then the communication is going to say then the minister must publish the new rate by this time. All of that is going to be the promulgation, and everybody will know about it. And as I've indicated, members, the reason is not in now. We don't want to have the same situation of 1st of May and put dates, and we're not finished in time. For whatever reason, somebody take us to court, we're not finished in time, and we don't meet those dates, and then we must explain why we are. And that's the reason. And you can't say that in the law, as long as you've got plans that you put in place on how to deal with that. And then the next issue is, again, Section 6, the issue of increase of the wages. We've already dealt with this issue, that the commission must increase the wages, the level of the increase of the wages. Now, the other issue, remember, I need to make it clear that we've had sectoral determination in this country for the last 5 years, 9 years, more than that. And all sectoral designations have been increased on an annual basis by inflation and 2+, almost all of them. All of them, all sectoral designations, not a single of that sectoral designation have ever been adjusted below inflation. They've always been adjusted by inflation and in addition above inflation, because we accept that these vulnerable workers, you need to continue bringing them up. Therefore, we've got a history of adjusting minimum wage by a factor of inflation plus something. And we don't think that is going to change. And because the law says we must protect the value of the national minimum wage.
On page 5, on the issue of conduct of the reviews and the midterm review, the Institute again, they are raising the issue that the midterm review must be in place within 3 years. Now, their interpretation of the word within 3 years, they interpret it as meaning in 3 years. Now, my interpretation of the word, English is not the best language, but when we say within 3 years, you can do it in 6 months. You can do it in 1 year. You can do it in 2 years. It doesn't mean that when the law says within 3 years, therefore it must be done in 3 years. Now, and we said this, because this issue was raised, we said, guys, we cannot fight labor battle. Labor must exercise their power in the commission. They are there in the commission. Ensure that the commission do the right thing. That's why we've got labor reps there and community to ensure that. But nowhere in the bill does it say that it must be done in 3 years. It says it must be done within 3 years. Therefore, for us, it can be a year, it can be 6 months, it can be 2 years. We don't know what are the issues. We don't want to tie the hands of the commission in terms of this. Now, on the issue of establishment of the commission, there's this issue that has been raised here about the independence of the commission, the secretariat, and all of these issues. I mean, we've had a long debate on this. In government, members would know you can have an independent organization like the CCMA, with a longer process to set because it's an entity. If you set up an entity, longer process, and all the problems affected to it. Now, for us, is that the commission is independent. There's no doubt about that. People in the commission take independence because there's no reason to influence the commission because the decisions they are taking is an advice to the minister. Why would then the minister want to influence them when they are not making executive decisions? They advise the minister. The minister's got the right to say, I disagree with you because of this and this and this. Can you reconsider this? And they look at it and they say, minister will still stand by our position. And then have go forward. Therefore, for us, the members of the commission representing labor, if they say they think that these guys, members, are going to be overpowered by the minister, then they must put strong people in the commission for labor, for community, and we'll be putting experts who are experts, professors in university, who are not going to take lightly for civil servants like us, telling them what to do when they are experts in this area. Therefore, we don't think that there's any issue about the independence of the commission. On the funding of the commission, we are busy now. We've even already been allocated an addition $60 million. It's unprecedented that treasurer allocate a department money for a project that has not even started. On top of the money that we have in terms of that section, treasurer has allocated us $60 million to set up the commission. We have not set it up, set up the secretariat. And the secretariat reports to the commission. Just like any institution in government, the commission must make up its plan and say, these are the things that we want to do over this period. What money do we want from the fiscal? And put their bid in just like everybody else. And then they will get the money. There will be no way where they are refused money unnecessarily. But if there's no money, it doesn't matter whether they are outside government or inside government. If the economy is such that treasurer is not collecting enough money, treasurer then will have to decide where to put the money. Do they put it in hospitals?
in dealing with crime, they could that's a decision that they will take looking on the priorities of government. It doesn't matter whether the secretariat is in or the secretariat is out, the issue of funding is dealt the same way in government. Now, it's not going to solve the issue of being independent in terms of that. On page 7, the issue of the Chamber of Commerce, this issue, the Chamber of Commerce is represented in NetLab by Busta. Busta accepts the minimum wage. In fact, they agree with the 20 rand. We get a little bit surprised when now we hear members of Busta coming in and questioning the same agreement that they've reached. Nevertheless, they are members of Busta. Now, the issue of appointment in the commission, as you said, is appointed by constituencies. They are raising the issue of the composition of the commission. It's experts, it's academics, it's union, and there's no government. Government is not, and we've taken this decision carefully for government because we believe that this is an issue affecting the community, labor, and business. And where they agree, unless their agreement is so bad, there's no reason for the minister not to agree on it. Now, on the function of the commission, now the issue about the employment amendment to the Employment Equity Act dealing with the racial, we are at an advanced stage, members of the committee, committee, to present proposed amendments to Employment Equity to cabinet. In fact, the first cabinet meeting that will sit after the recess in August, we are going to have two bills that will be coming to parliament. One is Employment Equity, and two is COIDA, and it's not two, three, and the other one is OSH. All of those bills are coming here. If they still want to comment on the amendments of the Employment Equity, if they want to make a case, there's an opportunity for them to do that when the bill comes here in parliament. But we don't think that they'll be coming this parliamentary round. They'll be coming in the new parliament after the election because we've missed that vote. But we'll be, after cabinet, we'll be publishing it for public comment. They can comment first there in the department. They'll publish it for public comment because it's a long process. We'll publish it for a long time, for maybe 2 months, give them that opportunity. On the issue of Section 11, they're raising the issue about Section 11F must be to include, they must be amended to include amending of sectoral determination. Now, again, members, I come to F. If you read the F, it says the committee must advise the minister on sectoral determination. The committee must advise the minister on any matter concerning basic condition of employment. The committee must advise the minister to perform any function that is required by the commission in terms of any other employment law. Therefore, there's no issue there. They've got the right to advise the minister. They don't need permission to the minister at all in terms of 11F. Again, we'll skip Cosato Fedusa Nabdu on page 8. Go to labor enterprise policy research. Again, they want the commission to be given rights to appoint power, to appoint staff. Obviously, the staff that matters in the commission, we're not talking about admin clerk, because the commission must have researchers. The commission has got to play a part in that. In fact, the commission might be even part of the interview panel. When it's appointed on this on the staff, so that we make sure that the staff are able to do what needs to be done. And the Section 13 is clear that the minister must make sure that the commission has got enough funds to do its job. If the commission does not have the funds, nothing prevents the commission coming here in parliament. And I'm sure the members of the committee, this committee is going to be asking this commission to come here from time to time to report on what they are doing. Now, they must be able to say to you that this minister, whoever the minister is at that stage, is not making it possible for us to do our job. And the committee will take its oversight seriously and make sure that the minister account on those issues, we don't see any problem in terms of this. The issue about exemptions are not aligned. We publish exemptions, honorable members, for comment. And if you look in terms of the bill on the section dealing with exemption, it is required that this exemption must be submitted in Parliament. Therefore, we will be submitting this submission in Parliament for Parliament to have a sight of what the exemption are all about, what are the issues. If Parliament, in its wisdom, believes that we need to make changes on the exemption processes, those changes will be made because the law says that the exemption regulation must be submitted in Parliament. And we will do that submission. The issue of, again, the Institute is talking about Section 15, referring to employer organization, should not be able, should be removed. If you look at Section 15, again, yeah, commenting on a different issue. The Section 15 indicates clearly that employer organization may assist their members. Now, you can't stop the employer organization assist their members. But what we need to explain for one of the members is that the system that we're going to bring here regulation, the regulation says clearly, we're developing a regulation that is modeled on the SARS system. I hope all members here take their checks and they do it online. And when you send your return online with SARS, you put your information. The same applies in the system that we're developing here. And therefore, if you are a tax consultant in terms of the SARS process, you can assist all of us here to submit. But you submit on an individual person. You don't submit, you don't say to SARS, I'm assisting 100 people. You say, you want to go to SARS, you take my password and my user way, you enter into SARS, you submit on my behalf. The same applies with this system, that each company will have to submit on its own its request for exemption. And that request must be accompanied by the information of that company. And that's how the system works. And that's what I'm saying, when we come here in Parliament with the regulation, we'll take members through the system, how it works. There is no way that an employer organization will be able to submit on behalf of 20 at one go. They can submit one by one with information for each employer. And that's what helps us operate. And it has not caused any problems in terms of the service situation. We've had a discussion with SARS, they've assisted looking at the system, and the analysis on whether you afford or you don't would be done by the system. It's not going to be done by us. People, the system will do it because, honorable members, we are avoiding brown envelopes. We don't want companies to be giving us brown envelopes in order to give them exemption. We want a transparent system that will treat everybody, whether they've got brown envelope or not, equally. There's no human factor in deciding. And that's what we're putting in place. But I'm raising this issue so that when you consider this, you understand what the regulations look like. When we are here with the regulation, we'll take you through that so that you can see how it will work. Now, the issue about whether the law should have everything about exemption, not in the regulation, we think laws differ in this issue. In this one, the regulation that we're going to be talking about when we come here, they've got everything that is in the DCA that they are talking about. Everything that is in the DCA is in the regulation. And of course, that is the same question. And for us, we think that those issues are important because you want to make sure that you are able to make changes in the regulation quickly. If employers adapt their system differently in order to defeat the system, you don't want to go to cabinet, publish a notice and come to cabinet to change the law when the economy is moving. We want to be able to make those changes quickly to protect workers. And that's why we put them in regulation. But if the members believe want that it be in the in the law for the member to make that decision. Umahlala, who was not part of the people who were here for oral evidence, one of those who were written, they want minimum wage to be 5,000. And then we're just indicating that this was the level recommended. It looked in consideration the effect that it might have in the economy. There's nothing else that we can say in that. Again, now the research, they talking about the target in making sure that farm workers and domestic workers meet the minimum wage. They say it's not in the law. Now, one of the members, we need to explain this. There is no agreement that says farm workers and domestic workers must be equal to the national minimum wage in 2 years. Does it say that? It says farm workers and domestic workers must be equal to the minimum wage in 2 years if the research supports that. Now, the fear that we have, we say, that we had at NetLab was that if you make it 20 rand, we want us to know what's going to be the effect on the 18 rand on jobs. If the 18 rand that you're giving to farm workers now has got the result that 30% of workers lose their job, I'm sure the research is going to say, guys, don't move too fast in this. Now, how do you put a provision like that in law? You say it must be equal in 2 years pending to research. It just doesn't work out. Now, that's why the law itself, we try to accommodate them in the present provision in terms of the legislation here, and they still not help in terms of that provision in the NA to cover that. But the issue that we're saying is that it does say in the law, if you look on the schedule, I want to go to the schedule, schedule one. Yeah, as I've said, that the issue about research is paramount for us. It's 2 years, as the agreement, the NetLab agreement, and we agreed with NetLab, with our constituents at NetLab, that the issue of 2 years, because it's dependent on research, is going to be difficult to put in the law as they want, in that schedule, to put it in the law. Because you're not giving anything when you say 2 years depending on research. Now, they are proposing something else again. They say that the section 5 of the BCA in page 10 gives the minister a right to publish to a list of PEWP, and they say this power that is given to the minister can be abused. Now, the first thing that members of need to raise is that this was not part of the amendment to the bill that was published, that came to Parliament. If you want to need to make this change, it means that it must go back, you must need to get permission first, because you're introducing a totally new amendment that was not in the bill, that is in the BCA. And that's the first problem that you have. And then there must go to the permission first in the NA to amend a section of the law that was not in the bill in the first place. That's the first thing. The second issue is that if the minister introduce a regulation that takes people out of the protection of the law, the minister will be in contravention of the objective of the law. If you look at the BCA, that section of the of section 50, that's what it's if you look at section 50 as it is, remember, this is how it reads.
I'm worried about your face.
Oh, okay, sir.
Not the chapter.
I'll read only this issue. This section indicates that I'm not able to get it now. But the issue is that it says that if the decision of the minister fulfills the objectives of the act. Now, the objective of the act of the BCA is to take people out of poverty. If the minister does anything that undermines the objective of the act, then the minister is out for a challenge. The powers of the minister to do anything are not unstated. The minister must act rationally. The minister must have valid reason why the minister decides to say this sector of workers are part of EWP. And for the last, since 1994, 1997, when the BCA came in place, the minister has never issued a single notice for that section. It's in the air. The minister has never used it. Now, why would the minister want to use it to undermine workers? Because that would be suicide for any minister. Any party that allows that, it would be suicide because of the number of poor workers that would be affected. The issue on the schedule, the issue for security workers, you know, the security, I mean, these guys want workers to earn 13 rand. The lowest paid security worker in terms of the sector designation in the rural area is 13 rand. If you agree to that, what it would mean that the farm workers in rural areas will earn 18 rand, and security workers will earn 13 rand. And we think that's unhealthy. If you look at the status quo now, the lowest paid in those rural areas are going to be 13 rand now. And they are proposing that they must be given 3 years to meet the national minimum wage. They are part of BUSA. They've never raised this issue at NEPA. They're part of BUSA. It was not raised by them at NEPA that the security sector must be given a schedule 3 years in differentiation in terms of that. And for us, we think it's unfair. And as members in the question that they were asking, this is a vulnerable sector. If they must protect their clients, if you don't pay them well, they're not going to do their job well. NUMSA and SASTU is the same with. NUMSA, yes. NUMSA, not SASTU, yes, sorry. NUMSA, it's the same input as with the freedom. It's on the other scale. The Freedom Foundation doesn't want any regulation. They want extreme regulation on the other hand. They want 12,500. Nothing that prevents that regulates price, nothing. I mean, you've got two organizations that are at the extreme end, one at the left, the other on the right. And unless the members want us to spend time discussing that, we don't think that's good news. But the issue about Shogomisa is those NGOs who deal with NGOs who, what is it? That provide services on behalf of the state. We're having discussion with them on this. You've got a situation where they say they support the minimum wage, but they are worried that the subsidy that they are getting is not enough for them to meet the national minimum wage. That's basically the essence of their. And you can't solve that issue of the subsidy through the national minimum wage. And what we said to them in the discussion, they must apply for exemption. We're working, we're discussing with them to ensure that we look at this properly and deal with it. When we come here to do a presentation on the exemption, what we're looking for, two things. We've met with social development. We're meeting again on Friday, social development, treasury, health, public works. In the next meeting, we include COPTA also as part of this because municipality has got this. And our view is that public workers, social development must give us a list of all the registered NGOs because by law they must be registered. And in the exemption process, We want to make it easy for them when they qualify to give them exemption. And we said, this is what we said. We said, we cannot justify giving anybody anything, in terms of them, an exemption that is below EPWP rate. We can't give an exemption below EWP rate. Their argument is that even now, they are not even getting the EWP rate. Now, what we're having a discussion with this department, we say, department, how can you make it sure? And we said to them, we think the minimum wage is going to come into operation by October, November. If it does that, let's look in our budget and see what is it that we can do to make sure that this organization receives a subsidy. At least that meets the EPWP provision. And remember, in terms of the agreement of the panel that was appointed by the president, there's a paragraph there where the panel says there's got to be a discussion in government generally and these MSOs on how to deal with this problem. Because these organizations say, look, some of us are skilled social worker, we can't be regarded as EWP. We must be above that, even above the minimum wage. But then there are workers there who are far below the minimum wage, who are getting 500, 1,000 rand stipend, basically. How do we solve those problems? And there's an issue that there are many workers, you know, you come into provinces, you interact with municipalities, who are regarded as volunteers. And they're not getting paid anything. And our view is that they are volunteers. When I volunteer, him as a people chief of the department, he doesn't expect to be paid. He's earning a lot in the department. He doesn't expect to be paid. He volunteers. If he volunteers to go and wash dogs at the PSCCA, he doesn't expect to be paid. But poor people that volunteer in municipalities and all, they are not volunteering. They are doing it because of desperation. Now, if they are called volunteers and they are given a stipend of 500 rand, we think that's unfair. And we're saying now to government, what is it that we need to do to make sure that by the time the national minimum wage comes into play, at least we are able to go to the EWP level, which is 11 rand an hour, for everybody, whether I call them a volunteer because what? And that's the interaction that we're having with government, in fact government. And we're saying, you don't need to tamper with the law. Let's have this discussion with them and facilitate and make sure that, because we don't want another city name. We're just not sure about that. We don't want to make sure that people are not being cared of because they cannot afford to pay the minimum wage. At the same time, you don't want to put workers to look after vulnerable people who are not getting paid. Then you get a disaster in that. The workers don't give the right services, the workers get frustrated, and all of those issues. Therefore, you've got to balance both these issues. You've got to balance the need for care, you've got to balance the need to pay workers decently. And those are the issues. It's not going to be easy. We've had that discussion, we're meeting again with this department on Monday. We said they must go out and do the sums. And they say for health, the health sector, and there's another dynamic there because there's an agreement to go to 3,500 in the health, what are they calling health? Community worker. Now, these are the people who say that if you're going to pay 3,500 and we can't afford it, and all of these people are coming from working the same environment, it's going to be chaos. But those are the issues that we're debating and see how. But from us, we say government must at least make sure that these organizations which are registered, who work in this field, are able to pay at least the 11 running hour, which is in the minimum wage. And in that, we'll make sure that they get exemption if they cannot afford through the exemption process. That's the way that we're going to handle this issue with civil liberty without breaking the law. That's the minimum wage members, our comment on the minimum wage. I will go straight to the DCA. It's not long, the DCA, the comments on the DCA are not long. the BCA on page one, the issue about Institute for Economic Justice again is the same issue that I've already talked about, the linkage between the minimum, the BCA and the national minimum wage, and the issue of agreement to increase the number of hours to more than four to five. And as we say, it's part of the network agreement, it will be dealt with as part of that agreement. Now, the next issue where they say repeal of Section 8 and 9 of Section 22, this has been changed because Section 5.3 does not compete with the BCA, as we indicated. We'll explain it when we're explaining the national minimum wage. The issue about the fact that the minister may advise the national minimum wage on the national minimum wage was dealt with those issues. The issues about the Chamber of Commerce was also dealt with the BCA. Remember, when we're dealing with the national minimum wage, I'm not going to repeat that. The issue about whether public council can hear disputes when workers are paid below the national minimum wage. The law now gives the CCMA that. Remember, all bargaining council commissioners are CCMA commissioners. And there's nothing wrong. And secondly, all the dispute resolution systems of bargaining councils are the same system with the CCMA. The CCMA has got access in those systems. When a case comes in, the CCMA has got access. Remember, they get paid for dealing with disputes. The CCMA manages it on those basis. Therefore, there's nothing wrong when the CCMA receives a case through a bargaining council, set it up with that council, with a commissioner of the CCMA, because to be a commissioner of a bargaining council, you must be a commissioner of the CCMA. You can't be. Therefore, we don't think this is a problem at all. It's an admission problem that will be handled between the parties, because bargaining council commissioners are CCMA commissioners. And they are raising the issue of the bargaining council. They say that if a non-compliance, in terms of the LRA gives bargaining council the right to enforce their agreement. And this does not change. And it does not necessarily follow that the national minimum wage does not regulate anything above the agreement of the bargaining council. It talks about below the minimum wage. Anything below the minimum wage comes to the CCMA. And as I said, the LRA make it clear that public council must enforce their own agreement. They raise again the issue of Section 83. They say that there's no provision in the law for a hearing and penalties on you can't challenge what's called an undertaking. Now, remember, an undertaking is an agreement. Now, if an employer agrees with an inspector and say, I've broken the law, I'm going to correct it, then they don't correct it. There's an agreement between the two parties that they've broken the law. Now, the inspector, the employer can't go to the CCMA and say, no, I don't have an agreement. Therefore, in an agreement, there's no hearing. This is how the system is going to work. If there's an agreement between the inspector and the employer, that the employer has broken the law, there's no hearing. The CCMA issues an arbitration upfront, no hearing. In a compliance order, if the employer disputes the compliance order, then there's a hearing. That's the difference between the two. An undertaking is an agreement. You've agreed. If you don't agree, you don't sign an undertaking. Simple as that. If you sign an undertaking, it means you say, I agree that I've broken the law. Now, we can understand what's the issue in terms of that. If you say you agree you've broken the law, you can, it's just like now, if you sign an agreement and then you go to court when you sign an agreement, the court is going to laugh at you. You're wasting the court's time because you sign an agreement that you're wrong you should not assign the agreement. You can't then go to court and say, no, 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 I don't, I agree, I disagree with my agreement. That's not how it works. Now, the next issue on page three, the issue about whether a hearing will take place pre-making an application, or what I've already explained that. There is no hearing for an undertaking. There is no hearing if the employer does not dispute the compliance order. If the employer does not say to the CCMA, how it's going to work is that the inspector will issue a compliance order. And after 14 days, the CCMA will issue an award. The employer has got, within that 14 days, time to say, I dispute this compliance order. If they don't say that, it's gone. Now, the next issue that they are raising is the Institute is making a number of amendments on Section 76 in issues around in terms of fines, and they are not indicating why. We just don't believe that these issues are necessary that they are proposing here. The issue about supply of government goods. We are having a discussion, honorable member, because remember, you can't buy this law amend the PFMA. Now, we're having an argument with the chief procurement officer in National Treasury. And there's a process in government to amend the regulation, procurement regulation. And as part of that process, we're saying that if a company does not comply with the national minimum wage, then the regulation themselves must say you are not able to do business with government. And that's how we're taking that part forward. We don't think it's the right to amend the PFMA through or the regulation through the National Minimum Wage Act. On the issue of the review of sectoral determination, we've dealt with this issue, that they can be reviewed. The manager, the commission has got the power to review it and advise the minister. The issue of the memorandum, I don't think the memorandum is not an issue here. We're talking the legislation. If the memorandum is not saying exactly what the law says, the memorandum is easy to change it and make sure it says that. That's the BCA. On the LRA, there are not many issues. Inspection 32. Now, this is, COSATU is happy, the Free Market Foundation is not happy with Section 32. Now, the main argument here, members, I'm going to combine all of them, all of those that talk about Section 32. NIASA is not happy with Section 32. Labor, those two, NIASA and the Free Market Foundation. They say, NUMSA is fine Section 32 if you look on their submission, but they are not fine with it because they say they reject everything. But in Section 32, they say we confuse them when we're explaining it, but they are happy with the detail. But because they rejecting the whole case, they can't select to accept this one. That's what they are saying. Now, Free Market Foundation, they say, well, you are undermining materiality. That's the basic argument. They say, you allowing smaller unions and smaller employer organizations to influence the decision of the minister. This is how I want to explain this issue, members. If you look in the LRA, Section 31 of the LRA, which deals with bargaining council, it says, it's one sentence, members, dealing with bargaining council. It says, when a bargaining council is registered, it must have a constitution, bargaining council. And the constitution of the bargaining council. The constitution of the bargaining council must. I want to.
Oh, no, it says.
Must have a procedure on how decisions are made in the bargaining council. That section has not been changed. Decisions in the council are made in terms of the procedure of the bargaining council as determined by the constitution. The constitution says how you make decisions. If that constitution of the bargaining council, which has got nothing to do with the minister, says decisions here will be made by majority or by minority, that's the constitution. The minister doesn't have a role to play. That's what they've decided. The same thing, if you've got a stock fence, you've got a constitution, it will say how you make your decision. Now, Section 32 deals, it says, if the minister, when the minister extends an agreement, the minister must consider representativity. That's what it says. We say that's wrong. The minister should not consider representativity. The minister should consider how many workers will be affected by this agreement. I'm going to make an example, members. If you take here in Parliament, let's take Parliament. There's Nihau, which negotiates with Parliament. Let us say Nihau represents 20% of the workers. And then they sign an agreement with Parliament for 12,500 minimum wage. That 12,500 is extended by Parliament to all the workers in Parliament. They don't say only NUSA members who are 20% of members. NUSA represents 20 members only. The employer negotiates with them. They reach an agreement of 12,500. That 12,500, they don't pay only. They don't say, no, members, you're going to get 5,000. But NUSA may not take any how members, because the union signed an agreement, you're going to get 12,500. That's an extension. It's a minority union that they negotiate. Now, we say, why should the minister be bogged down, tell employers that you can't negotiate with a minority union? Is that the face of a politician? Should the minister tell parties who to negotiate with and say no? If parties decide to negotiate with a union and sign an agreement that is a majority, that's their decision. The minister should just look at that agreement and say, how many workers will be affected by this agreement? If any of the parties here, if the employer employs the majority, then the minister must accept. If the union has got to represent the majority, the minister must accept. That's what you say. Therefore, it got nothing to do with decision making in the council. Decision making in the council is done in terms of the council constitution. If that constitution says something else, it's their problem. Not the minister. The minister has got nothing to do with it. The minister extends an agreement. And that's the problem that they've got. They are attacking a different section for different reasons. They don't want it because they, in the metal industry, they are the minority.
Mm.
Now, NUMSA and CIFSA is more likely to agree than them. Now, they've been able to block the minister in extending this agreement now because they raise this argument of majority of the parties in the country. And they say, no, that's not. And connected to the constitution. Therefore, that's our answer to this. Our answer is in Section 31, which deals with decision making of the Council of the LRB. That section is not changed. Therefore, if they want to make sure that decisions are made by majority, they must put it in their constitution and make sure that it's done in their hand. That's NIASA and the. Now, the issue about labor enterprise. They say there's no or between. They look at the wrong legislation. I'm not going to speak to the issue. It's there. The legislation has put the or. And that's the or that NIASA doesn't want. Of course, very small amendment. Previously, it was and. Now we put or. It makes a big difference. They don't want it. And it's there. Primarket continues with this. Labor enterprise. They say the two sections talk to each other. That's not the case. What they are saying, and then NIASA, they are continuing with this argument of the extension. Now, the minister, we're giving the minister the power to be able, if they are asked by one party, to extend a period of agreement of the agreement. Now, members, I'm going to paint you a picture. There are parties in the council. They've agreed to have an agreement for to pay workers 20 rand an hour. Now, that agreement is for 3 years. It expires. Now, parties are fighting in the council. We say any party should be able to say to the minister, extend the period. The minister is not changing the content at all. It's still 20 rand. But the minister can only extend and say this agreement that they've agreed on will still apply. Because you don't want to destabilize workers' benefits. And the next thing that we're saying is that the minister can do the same thing. You've got the medical aid, the province one, that is deducted for workers. And then the agreement expires. And then there's a big fight in the council. Now, non-parties, remember, if there's no agreement, non-parties are going to stop deducting for province funds. The country needs savings. It encourages people to look after themselves at their old age. Now, if we are going to have provision where province funds and medical aid are bankrupt because there's no agreement, we don't want that. And we say the minister should be able to extend an agreement if she is asked by any of the parties, and we don't think there's anything wrong with that. They don't want it because the other want the agreement to expire, and then they will go and say, we'll sign the wage agreement. Only if we'll sign this agreement to publish for Provident Fund, only if you agree on a lesser wage. They want to use Provident Fund and benefit as a negotiating tool to get agreement with something else. We say, you put in workers' future at risk. And that's the issue about this. On the issue about renewal and extension of funding agreements, that's the issue that I'm talking to, that they don't want. The issue about balloting, NUMSA and PEDUSA, I'm not going to deal with it, but what I want to explain, members, is that on the balloting, there's no amendment that introduces a secret ballot. The amendment just explain what a ballot is. Presently, the law says, as it said, that before a union goes on strike, it must ballot. That's what the law says. But the law doesn't say that that ballot must be secret. And what that was done is to define what a ballot is. Now, many of the union constitutions said a ballot will be done by a show of hands. That's what they say. Now, remember, if you go to the Oxford Dictionary, you look at the word ballot, that way you cannot have a ballot without secrecy. You can have a vote without secrecy. If we want to vote here, we can vote for show of hands. But a ballot, you can never have a ballot without secrecy. It goes hand in hand, the word ballot. And that's what we're explaining in the bill. Therefore, not introducing anything, but explaining what a ballot means. I'm not going to deal with Pedusa and Nasu. Section 150, the issue about the Cape Chamber of Commerce, they say that Section 150 might be abused. We hope not. We'll see on the implementation, they're not raising anything. They're raising a concern that it might be abused. On the issue of, there's one comment that is made on the affordability UIS, whether this is. They are understanding that they think that because you are putting this benefit, now you are going to increase the 1% to 2%. That's not the case. Remember, the actuaries have costed this amendment. This amendment for what we've done, we've taken the 2% that is contributed and say what will be the cost. The cost is below 100%. Therefore, they are affordable. We don't have any issue to worry about that will increase the cost. That's our response, members. We'll take questions for clarity or anything that. I'm sorry if I've taken longer. I'm hoping that because I've explained it the way I've explained it, the lesser question.
Thank you very much, DDG and the Chief Director, for the presentation. On the responses to the submissions made by the stakeholders. Honorable members, we will be now asking questions for clarity, but let's take each piece of legislation. We start with the national minimum wage, we'll finish it, and then we go to the CDA amendment, done with it, and then we go to the labor relations amendment bill. Just clarities. And then what, as I indicated yesterday, those members were here yesterday, is that we will be deliberating on the 7th of August. We can then use this period of the constituency period to again look at the submissions, all the submissions that have been made, and then look at the bills. We look at the bills from the National Assembly Portfolio Committee and also the original bills from the Department of Labor, but also the current acts on the Labor Relations Act, I mean on the Labor Relations Act, as well as the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. So those three, but then because the national minimum wage is new, so there's no act currently. So the two that have acts is the Labor Relations Act and the Basic Conditions of Employment. We use that so that when then we deliberate, we're able to say, but Department of Labor, you didn't respond. You remember when it was opening, he said, this is how we summarize it, the way we understood the submissions. But as members, you may have your own way of understanding the submission. For example, the Free Market Foundation was talking about the automatic exemption and also arguing that there should be a threshold, for example, in terms of the turnover, and also the issue of the number of employees. That's what the point that they were raising, which I pick up that the department has not responded to that. But there may be other issues that members may be picking up. But for now, I suggest that we should not do what I'm doing, but let's ask questions for clarity. But then when we have all the time, we put down all these submissions and say this organization said this on this particular issue, and this is how the department responded. But then the department did not respond on this particular issue. We may find out in the end the department has responded to all. I don't know for now. So that's a process that I'm explaining there. Can we then have hands, Honorable Makuwe, Honorable Pakis, Honorable Makwebu, in that order for now.
Thank you, Chair.
No, I'm sorry.
No, Richard, okay.
I think the presentation has been very helpful. So my questions would, the first two would not relate directly to the presentation, but to the process. The one is, Mr. Mukalipe, when you look at the presentations that you made to us, is there anything new vis-a-vis the presentation that has been made to the NA, so that we can just pick that up? Because it's going to be important for us to do that. The second one is, Chair, that if you look at the Sienna and the security workers, I think it's the same presentation, am I right? But my question there is, my third question is almost going to be the same. Can you tell us, because we don't have enough information, is there a trade union for security workers? And where does that trade union stand? You don't have to go into detail. You can just tell us they were part of NetLay, in or out. Let me have to take that right. The third one is, Chair, on the one of the non-profit organizations. As I said during that presentation, with my own history, I'm inclined to be biased towards that. what I want to say now. But when I listen to the solutions that you propose, talking to the Department of Social Development, and I would trust also the Department of Health, I think that's good. However, what we have picked up is that the payments to these organizations are not made nationally. They are made at the provincial level. So are you thinking of engaging with the DSD structures and DOE structures at the provincial level as well? Before, let me conclude there to say, can you engage with them in time?
Thank you very much, Honorable Pakis.
Sihlalo, masibulele indawo. And I appreciate the presentation. I want to comment first on your caustical remarks on the framework that any attack to our labor laws regime is never ideologically neutral. Not today, even not tomorrow. Because when you go deeper and research on what is it, I mean, your liberal parrot cry, what is it all about? You will find that it's on your Basic Conditions of Employment Act, your Labor Relations Act, your Land Tenure Amendment Act. You name all those progressive pieces of legislation, and they are ideologically based and orientated in nature. But I want to link that point with the issue of affordability versus exemptional process. Yeah, because as much as your liberal says our labor regime legislation causes unemployment and are not so flexible, yet you have super exploitation by the bosses to different sectors of our economy in our country. But then let me go straight to the point that I want to make. Look, I'm worried, Honorable Rukhai, the chair, if we will allow exemption or exemptional processes where your community health care workers, your extended public works program, your security. Look, these workers, they are underpaid. They earn a meager, I don't want to say the salary, but just a meager resource that they cannot even survive on it unless they can only buy your 12.5 and electricity. Nothing is gone, you know. And I want to tell you from the department, leaders, our own leaders, I'm a very straightforward person, our leaders are using these workers and underpaying them. Some of them, they go 6 months chairperson without being paid the same stipend that you're talking about, without getting that stipend. And it's so disappointing if you get such attitude and conduct from our own leaders, who are supposed to be protecting the same exploited workers from our community. Now, I'm just raising that point of exemption, that they will say, we don't have enough resources to conform to the Act, therefore we are engaging in this exemptional process so that we cannot afford this particular payment that we must make, I have a problem with that. I think I must be upfront and be lucid about it. Look, I'm not sure because, Chair, just pardon me, because I've not been part of this committee. Another sector that is being exploited is your retail sector, your checkers. If you want any sector where our unions must be fortified and engaged and declare war to the bosses, it's on this sector. But now, I'm not sure whether what we are talking about does include or affect this particular sector in terms of our economy. The last point that I want to raise, Chair, relates to your... Allow me to raise it because it's just a minor issue. Your ballot. There was a hearsay even long time before we talk about this amendment that from the sectors, Honorable Kai, sectors that are anti-workers, we'll raise it because we are here, anti-workers, that these unions are troublesome, we need to hamstring them, we need to tame them. And one way of taming unions and the labor movement, if I can put it that way, labor movement in our land, is to introduce ballots before any strike could take place. Thank you. Now, you're saying you are just defining what is ballot in terms of the legislation, but there's that suspicion that you want to tame unions, and the way, one way of taming unions, because they affect the economy of the country, is to introduce ballot before any strike could take place. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Makwe, I didn't want to stop Honorable Paki's because, as he was indicating, that he has not been part of the committee before. But I expect those who were part of the committee that for now we're dealing with the clarities, take into account the submissions and the responses. But when it comes to deliberation, as I indicated earlier, we'll be deliberating on the 7th of August. That's when then we will be engaging, whether we agree with this or that. For now, we're not doing that, but we're asking questions for clarity on the responses to the submissions. I wanted to clarify that before other members come in, but also the department, when it responds, should not be engaging, but it should be clarifying. But then on the 7th, then we will be engaging. But mainly it will be the members themselves against each other. Will then the issues of the ideology and all that, it will be a debate amongst the members, because now this law is a responsibility of members themselves. You have a responsibility of making the law. The department brought the law to us in the form of a draft bill. We will be engaging now with the bill, and then Matandi says she has this thing of saying you're passing the law. It's like you are passing it, but you are making the law, not passing the law. She always said, even this morning in the programming committee, she was making that a point. Now, for now, it's just clarity, yes. Over to you, Honorable Makwebu.
Chair, before my comments, I don't protect the Kupakis. I think the UN Pakis have put an agenda today, this afternoon, but just one clarity, I think, for you, DDG, this one, through you, Chair. I thought I heard you saying something, and I'm not sure I understood you. What did you mean when you said when you're dealing with the capacity of CCMA, that CCMA will recoup the cost of hearing the national minimum wage disputes? I'm not sure I understand what you mean. I just need clarity. And then the teller who buggies a cool room will serve as in the study.
Another room, Chevy?
Chair, let me start with the national minimum wage.
I think Bamkali, I want to get a sense of what is the departmental view on the sectoral determination. If you remember what Neil was presenting, a view that says there seems to be this view that you want to, I don't know, that's why I asked him to be clear. Whether does the institution suspect that you want to deal away with sectoral determination or you want to water them down? Or what is the view? But from a departmental view, what is the view of the department in relation to the introduction of the national minimum wage vis-a-vis the sectoral determination? Secondly, still on the national minimum wage, this promulgation by the president, when it happens, will it be retrospective? The third one, Chair, there seems to be also from the Commission a view that says there must be the standing on guard against the Commission so that the skills and capacity of the Commission is protected, and I don't know what creates such a view that the Commission might be just a lackey of a minister, and but from what is in the submission by the department and also in the bill passed by the portfolio committee, there seems to be explicitly a view that says skills, capacity and all those requirements will be considered. But say for instance, as you may say, Bamkali, the commission sends a recommendation to the minister and the minister disagrees with the commission. Do you have dispute resolution mechanism? The fourth one, Chair, is about the exemptions. I know, you know from the department, that is what is the fear about exemptions. The fear about exemption is that they are going to be abused. That's the fear. And I think the department is stopping short of addressing from a departmental view. What is it the department is putting in place to avert the abuse? I can do an example now. The public hearings on the expropriation without compensation are continuing. The flooding of submissions into the same, that can happen in your instances where people are just going to flood the department with exemptions. And what do you do? So the issue about exemptions is not about that exemptions are not going to be tolerated, but it's about how do you cap the abuse if you allow exemptions, so that you don't get even people who can afford tapping into a possibility that because exemptions are provided for in the bill and therefore they are going to exploit the situation. And in the meantime, you have workers that are stranded, and you have an employer that is taking you on a holiday, on a ride about the provision of the bill. Chair, I don't know if you allow me to go to the others.
Can we just check whether any members want to ask questions on the national minimum wage before you go to the next week? Seems not. Then which one are you going to go to? PCA?
No, LRA.
LRA, okay. Remember, then after Honorable Ntebe, you'll be given a chance to comment on the LRA, okay, you can go ahead.
Chair, with your permission, as you indicated earlier, submissions will be made in the latter date in relation to the others. So in the BCA, I have no questions. On the LRA, Bamkali, is this intervention by the CCMA going to come in a form of Section 150? If yes, have you done study about the abuse of employers in terms of the 150 intervention? And in this case, have you checked how that provision was neglected in terms of the platinum belt situation since 2012? Thank you, Chair.
Any other comments on the labor relations amendment?
No, Chair.
No, don't block out the in your case, you don't have questions, but allow others.
There are many spokespersons in GA, forgive me.
Any on LRA? Okay. On BCEA? Okay. Okay, members, will then, as I indicated earlier, we'll get the opportunity when we're deliberating. And also, yeah, we'll deal with close by close. EDT.
Thank you, Chair, and we'll utilize the same principle. We'll share the responsibility in terms of responding to the issues. And perhaps just concentrate on those clarification questions rather than the content of those questions, which we will engage at the appropriate time in relationship with it. So let me deal with the issue. Is there anything new since the NM? No. These are the same submissions that we've received in the National Assembly, and there's nothing new that is brought to the table significantly that seeks to change the legislation. So there's nothing new in the is there trade unions for security workers? Yes. There's a number of trade unions. The presenter with a feint that they engage in a negotiating forum currently. With a number of trade unions. So there are trade unions that operate within the security industry. And some of the TAO was one of those NUMSA as well. We now jokingly this morning referred to NUMSA and general workers union. NUMSA is also there. There are a number of trade unions. In fact, at some stage, we engaged with about 18 trade unions. In the negotiating forum, when we started establishing as the gentleman indicated in 2009, 2006, when we had the strike that cost a number of lives within the industry. So there are a number of trade unions with respect to the NPOs, Chair. I think the crux of the submission, as we saw it, was in relationship to the funding mechanism. Of and how it relates to the ability of the sector to engage with the national minimum wage. It had nothing to do with the national minimum wage in its architecture and its basis at all, but in terms of how the funding mechanism, both at a national level but at a provincial level, engages with that reality and the possibility that it may cause deleterious harm to the institution to the ability to comply with the national minimum wage. And I think that's the engagement that we have with the different departments, and the Department of Health is included in this discussion. How do we protect the notion of a national minimum wage in the context of these realities that we have? With respect to sectoral determinations, what is our view? Simplicity for us is the key. If we had a national minimum wage only in the country, and we had done away with sectoral determination, and that would be key, because it would simplify the enforcement mechanism. It will free up resources for enforcement, etc. But the reality of the matter in some of the sectoral determinations, private security, contract cleaning, and there are a number of conditions that are peculiar to this sector, which we think if we do away with sectoral determination, we will do away with these protections that are provided specifically in relationship to, for example, providence funds that have been established in the private security and in the contract cleaning and other factors in the private security sector. We actually have a bonus that is regulated in terms of unlike any other sectoral determination. So the reality of the matter is that sectoral determinations in its protection that is provided, peculiar sets of workers are still important in relationship to that. But these peculiar sets of workers also provide peculiar conditions that need to be made. For example, the taxi industry has peculiar conditions in terms of its operating hours, whether it's long distance, short distance, and we need to be mindful of those realities, and we need to provide for those realities. We also need to be mindful that new sectors that may come up with in the changing nature of work in the industrialization, that we may have to provide different sets of protection in terms of it for these workers that emerges and provides a peculiar vulnerability in its operation, and therefore sectoral determination, whilst we think there should be some flexible method, becomes a reality of the labour market that we face. And we need to be able to have a mechanism that caters for these mechanisms that is able to allow for these to operate. Skills and capacity of particular for the National Minimum Wage Commission, obviously yes. And I think Mr. Mkhalipi has been at pains to say that we need to be able to provide the capacity within the Department of Labour or within the Commission, the administration of the Commission, that will be able to deal with the complexity of the nature of the debates that are there. We don't have in the Department for an example, the capacity to do to econometric analysis, as an example, wage employment elasticity, that is required in order for us to be able to say what will be the impact of a national minimum wage be on employment, what will it be in relationship to the ability of the employer to pay that work. And we are of the view that the Commission will need these services, will need these expertise that are able to do. More often than not, we outsource these functions to the university that have this capacity, and we think we'll have to establish that capacity within the Department of Labour to deal with those measures, so that the commission that will be established will be able to tap in that commission and advise and require of that administrative staff to be able to give them the kind of support that they require. So we are very mindful of the fact that the commission in and by itself will be able to have a say and should have a say in terms of what is the capacity that they require in terms of the industry in this regard. Dispute resolution of the ministry. Currently, with sectoral determination, if the minister does not agree with the ECC decision, the minister can send it back to the ECC to reconsider. Beyond that, the minister must accept the ECC recommendations. He does not have a choice to go back, and we think that the same principle should apply in this regard. Obviously, we will have the input of Parliament in relationship in terms of the process that we need to deal with going forward. CCA to recoup the cost, and I think that's a question that you asked, honourable member, is that the mechanism of enforcement provides for two things. One, actually for three things. One is that the employer who is found to be non-compliant will have to pay the employee what is due to the employee. Two, there is an additional fine for the employer that says, in the event that you do not comply, there'll be a cost to your downcome, so that it makes it difficult for you not to comply with the legislation. So instead of just the money due to the employer, there's an additional premium that the employer will have to pay, whether it's two or three times the payment due to the employee. Third thing that it seeks to promote is that the CCMA must establish a rate for the cases that they, in the event that you have not complied, the CCMA can claim from you the cost that is applicable to hearing that case in terms of that. So that's the mechanism that I talked for the CCMA to be able to recoup the cost that they've expended on hearing the case on behalf of. So that mechanism is a working mechanism that we think, and we have an agreement with the social partners that should apply in this regard.
The rationale for this recouping is that we believe it's unfair for companies that comply with the law, pay the minimum wage, to subsidize companies which are not complying with the law by using taxpayers' money to pay for this. Now, if a company does not pay the minimum wage and the system issues an order, then that company must pay for the cost of the system. But if the system finds out the company has done nothing wrong, then they don't have to pay. They only pay if they are found. The system may issue an order against them. They should have known. There's no excuse in terms of the law. This issue about dispute between the commission and the minister. Remember, minimum wage is a political tool for any government, anywhere you go. It's a political tool, it's a political decision. Now, a government in power is allowed by law to take decisions. What are those decisions they do not agree with the commission? In terms of the law, what it says is that if the minister doesn't agree, send it back to the commission, for the commissioner to reconsider. The commissioner reconsider, comes back to the minister and say, "Minister, we've looked at it, what you are raising, we still stand by our decision." Then the minister must go to cabinet, and cabinet takes a decision and say, "We disagree with this." Now, if cabinet takes a decision disagreeing with the commission, anybody can challenge them, because that decision must be rational. And under normal circumstances, you would expect that a decision of the commission would be accepted. But if it's not accepted, and it's not a rational decision taken by the ministers and the commission and government, then they will challenge. The minister might say the commission is giving less increase than I think they should give. And then the minister will have to come up with the evidence why that she thinks that 20 rand, the market can support it, than 15 rand. If she cannot convince that, anybody in the labor market can take the minister's court for a rational decision. And if the minister reduces the amount of the commission, well, any government that gives lesser when the commission that you can afford, the market can afford more, I'm definitely sure in the next election it will be out of government. But you can't take away the power of the political decision that can be made by cabinet and the minister on that. Therefore, that's how in the law the decision, the disputes are made. The minister must refer back. But if the commission speak and the minister speak, then the minister must take the decision if she's responsible and take the responsibility for that. There are two things. She can be challenged in court and she can lose power. The party can lose power. The backdating of the law, no, the law is end going to be backdated. And that said that you don't normally backdate a law because you don't want to make innocent citizens guilty of a law that is backdated. You don't know my backdated law. It can't be backdated. It's going to be a big fight if we go through that issue. The issue of abuse with exemption, another member, abuse is just like crime. There always be people who want to try their life in crime. The issue is when they are caught, what do you do about them? If our system works and when they are caught, we deal with them, then it will reduce crime. But if we don't deal with that, then we have problems with abuse. The flooding of applications, it can't happen because this is a system. If we flood SARS, what can happen is that the system can crash. That's what can happen. And that's what I said, that we need to bring the system here so that members should know what is it that the system will look at in deciding whether can you afford or not. And you're correct, member, that under normal circumstances, in many countries that have got minimum wage, you don't have exemption. You might either have exclusion where it says minimum wage does not apply in this sector, but to those that it applies, there's no exemption. You pay. For those that it does not apply, then you don't pay. In our case, because of trying to get a deal on this, exemption was part of the deal that we had to go through. And I'm foreseeing that the situation going forward, in 2 years, 3 years' time, there might be a decision that says, now that we've seen how these animals work, let's get rid of this. And they have maybe two or three exclusions. But what I'm saying is that on the issue of abuse, the system is built in such a way that the information that you give will determine whether you have it. If you lie in that information, there are consequences. Now the issue is going to be what we do with that. Now on the issue of Section 150, is this part of the Section 150? Now the problem with Section 150 as it stands now, honourable member, is that when there's a strike, at the beginning of the strike, Labour believes that this government is going to fall tomorrow and give us the money. When the strike is 2 weeks down the line, when they start shaking up now, they can see that workers are no more standing united. The employer thinks that no, this strike is going to fall. That's not. Now, the problem that the Section 50 president has said is that the system may can't do anything with Section 50 unless the parties agree. That's the problem. Therefore, the minister, the system, if companies in the platinum sector say the strike is violent and they don't want the system to come in, the system can't come in. But with the changes that we're making now, we'll look at the experience in terms of Section 50 and try and deal with those changes, those experience that we've had, to make sure that you're not going to have the situation where the country is going to be held at random, either by labor or business. If the strike is violent, if the strike is prolonged, and it affects the local economy. And that's what we're trying to look at and say, what are the shortcomings of the present Section 50 now, and what is it that we need to do to deal with those issues. I think my colleague has said with all the issues, but there's nothing to do with the issue. The issue of ideology, the issue that you raised, there's an issue about whether is this issue of ideology.
Okay. On that one, it was a comment, which is the reality and which is what is happening in our land. The issue that I wanted you to respond is on your retail sector.
The retail sector, the minimum wage affects all workers. All workers, whether on retail, security, all workers, except those like farmers where they've got 18 rands and domestic 15 rands. All other workers, it's 20 rands. And except if you've got an exemption. If you've got an exemption, then you pay the amount that you pay.
There's just two small issues. You also raised the issue of balloting in relation to employers utilizing the balloting process to subvert the collective bargaining process. Balloting is not a new provision. It's not a new provision that is new. All we did in terms of balloting is specifying the nature of balance, that is the secret balance. And we just strengthened that understanding because balance by its nature is secret. I thought that's an important one. The last issue that I think is the issue that you raised here around the automatic exemption system. We thought in addressing the exemption model that we try to address it in that context. Can I just point out that there's not going to be a blanket exemption. Blanket exemption, because this is effectively what they're asking. An exemption to be based on the peculiar nature of an application and the individual nature of an application in that regard. And therefore, we need to think of it in that context. Thank you, sir.
Yes. How long shall that exemption stand?
Yes. And you can reply. On the issue of ballot again.
On
the issue of ballot members, they are already union factors with big in the Western Cape. In their constitution, it requires secret ballot already. There are unions that have got this provision in their constitution. There are unions that are there. Therefore, it's not new in the labor market. And you're correct that the ballot can be a disincentive for workers to go and strike for unions. It can also be an organizing tool. If you do a ballot and 94% of your workers vote for a strike and you say to employers, we mean business, we've had a secret ballot, it was independently monitored, and 94% of our workers are prepared to go and strike on this. You could use that to organize and get a better deal.
Honorable Chair.
Okay, if we can go to an issue of balloting, Bamkari, we'll spend the whole time. I can tell you now, in some instances, you know, that employers, more often than not, they also explore the same thing to break down mobilization by workers. So maybe it's a contested terrain. Yeah. I think it's either
depending on where you
start. But this,
Section 150, Bamkhali, can I request through your chair that you write something like you did on comments about it? I can tell you now. I can tell you now. Section 150 has been reduced to a toothless provision of our law by parties who are disengaging in a process that should be bringing about industrial peace and therefore negating the very spirit and the intent of the law. Therefore, if you come to a process like this and tell us that Section 150 is going to work, I can tell you now, a person who has been part of that process, that Section 50 has failed. I can tell you, I can give you tons of examples. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Wanted to respond or not? Okay. I think there's one issue. I don't know if it came to your attention in terms of the submission that we're receiving on the private members' bill. There's a, in my document here, even though it's not signed, there's Lizanne Maurice. it's just very short. It says, in general, I support a bill referring to the private members' bill, and I think it is a great initiative. I have an interest in the bill as soon to be my only concern are that the bill is to repeal Section 27, 2 in brackets, A. Of the Basic Condition of Employment Act, which provides for 3 days full pay when an employee's child is born. While the proposed new Section 25A grants the parent 10 consecutive days leave, which amount to 8 business days for employees working 5 days a week, there is no provision regarding full pay, but UIF must be claimed instead. The administrative burden on the employee may prevent some employees from taking this leave, especially if they do not qualify for UIF for some reason. For example, their employer did not contribute on their behalf, they have not been working at the employer long enough, etc. And if the UIF will result in a lower payment than their salary, it will also cause a financial and administrative burden on the UIF. I suggest that the proposed Section 25A must rather provide for 10 consecutive leave days on full remuneration by the employer, or alternatively keep the provision in the current Section 27.2A that 3 full days pay will be granted by the employer, so that employees are not put into a worse position than with the current legislation. And then UIF can be claimed for other 7 days. But I make sure that the committee secretary said it to you.
I think I can come on this. I understand the UIF. I mean, the issue, paternity leave first, does not come, just like maternity leave, does not come out of your credit in terms of the UIF. It does not come out of your credit. Therefore, you get paid, it does not affect your credit for unemployment purposes. Because if you do that, it will be unfair for women workers who give birth and then they claim unemployment, and then they are unemployed 6 months down the line, then they can't claim unemployment. Therefore, it does not come, the same as paternity leave, does not come out of the credit. Now, she is saying that because presently employers pay for 3 months, 3 days leave when your baby is born, then the 10 days that you get paid, first, if you calculate 10 days salary and the UI payment, it's going to far more than that. And the intention of this bill is to give fathers an opportunity to bond. And fathers should be prepared to bond for 10 days. They'll get paid the UI equivalent of the money. And then that was the compromise that was made in between to introduce paternity leave at 10 days and get them paid by UI. But if the child gets sick, they can still get the 3 days after that, but this is purely for paternity leave. Now, you cannot have a situation where a female who gives birth doesn't get paid through UI. Then a male who goes in for 10 days and gives support get paid in the same process. Then you're going to be accused of discriminating against females. I mean, that's the answer to that question, and we apologize that if it was said, has not responded. That's how we would have responded to it.
Okay. what I thought I said that perhaps it must still be sent to you, and then so that we have records of your response, so that the person should not say her response was not considered by the select committee. Okay. I don't know if there are any other issues. I think now we're fine.
No, we're
done. that's good. Legal service, anything you want to say?
No, Chair, just to say, in our view, it seems quite a few of the submissions use the incorrect version of the bill, because we've gone through all the submissions also. Secondly, all the issues raised were previously raised in the PC. 99% are policy issues, so at legal we don't have a view on it. And you'll see that from the first version of the bill that was originally introduced versus the version that's in front of the committee, the national minimum wage in particular was only a 5-page bill. We made over 40 changes, many of which were fiercely resisted by the DOL, but we pushed for some of them. So the bill looks very different now than what it did originally. So in my view, I've gone through all of the submissions. I can't see anything new. I can't see anything that we haven't addressed, unless this committee feels in terms of policy there are some changes that you wish to make. But otherwise, we're fairly comfortable that all the issues have been addressed adequately. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. As I indicated earlier, that we will be then deliberating on the 7th of August. Tomorrow is our last day. We will be dealing with the appropriation, and we're only coming back in Parliament. The very first day that will be in Parliament will be the 7th, and our very first meeting will also be on the 7th. But just to those members who are not part of the programming committee, there has been a change now. Initially, we were supposed to come back on the 31st. The very first meeting was going to be on the 31st, but the decision that has been taken now is that from the constituent period, we're going straight to the oversight visit. We have already agreed as a committee that our oversight visit will be in the Popo. So on the 30th of July, we're going to Limpopo, where we'll be having our oversight. And then the following week, we'll be having the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development on the deliberations on these labor laws. I think, therefore, as I indicated last week, with regard to this this one of the private members' bill, all that we'll be receiving even before that, maybe tomorrow, or I don't know how soon, as soon as the committee secretary send that submission to the department, then the department will respond. And then we deal with the, I think it should be the first one that we deal with on the 7th, so that we're done with it. So that should then be the situation with regard to that one, as I indicated last week. If for some reason we take longer on others, at least this one must be done with it. Thank you very much, honorable members, for coming and your participation. Thank you very much, DDG, and your team. We'll see each other again on the 7th. Yes. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.
You welcome to the but we have to fine tune it. You need to